gentlemen, it's time to get in touch with your guy side at POP Fishing and Marine. Explore the marine part of POP. Just pass the cash register, through the big doorway, a huge warehouse, open to everyone, filled with boating parts and supplies. A genuine metrosexual free zone. Real work gloves, heavy duty boots, foul weather jackets. No pastel colors here, only marine blue, bright safety orange, zinc and stainless steel. Gear for sailboats and powerboats, pumps, engine parts, trailer parts, coolers tough enough to hold ice for 12 days, anchors, meat smokers. It's time to get your man up and your gear on. Our experts will help you find exactly what you need, and if we don't have it, we'll bring it in for you. Let your guy side out to play, guys. Gear, glory, we got it. POP Fishing and Marine on Pier 38 next to Nico's.
You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at WPCouncil.org.
You know,
now, troll on in.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Troll on in, indeed. Welcome again. As I was telling you earlier, we're going to talk about something today that's always been, you're not going to talk about that again, are you? Yeah, we are. And it's because I think that almost none of us want to be further encumbered by rules and regulations or permits or licensing or anything or titles or, you know, and every time it comes up about a fishing license, whether it's a commercial license, which we have, or a non-commercial license, which we don't have, recreational license, which we don't have, there's always more pushback than push forward. I want to tell you that I've been getting mixed reaction of some of these things lately because of some of the abuses that go on in the, quote, non-commercial part of our fishery. And even though it is not a backbone of what the council does, the council is certainly aware of all fishing and the uniqueness of the Hawaiian Islands when it comes to what's commercial and what's recreational. So Josh DeMello is going to put on a different hat today, because in the science that he needs to compile, it's usually from information. And the information usually comes from, you know, reliable sources, whether it's the fish auction or maybe a commercial fishing license report turn-in. But very little information comes out of the recreational community. And I guess in some respects, Josh, it's kind of a long introduction. That's kind of like what you guys need. You don't care whether somebody has a license or not. You just want to know what's going on out there.
Right. And I think it's always been the council's mandate to to be able to say what should be happening in the fishery, and to be able to say that, you actually need you need data. You need to know what's coming out and what's being thrown back or how much effort is being put into catching that fish.
Certainly, the fish doesn't know whose hook it is, whether it's a commercial guy or non-commercial guy. But in actual fact, there's been more than anecdotal evidence to suggest that in some parts of our fishery, the recreational side is taking way more than the commercial side, and it's unaccounted for.
For the most part, we don't really know. I mean, there's been a bunch of surveys to see how many people are actually part of that recreational fishing universe. Mm-hmm. And it varies widely from 50,000 to 150,000 to 500,000.
Yeah, I know.
And that includes the visitor fishing in as well.
How unique is our council district than others? I mean, I know others have many similar conditions, but certainly there aren't as many indigenous fishermen, say on the East Coast or West Coast, like we have here in percentage and numbers. But are there other areas that, doesn't every other state have a recreational license already?
Every other state in the United States has a recreational fishing license, right, except for Hawaii.
Yeah.
I think our territories out in the Pacific and in the Caribbean don't have licensees either. But everyone else does have that license. So that brings up another point, is that we also have the National Saltwater Angler Registry, which is in effect.
In effect,
so if you're fishing outside of 3 miles for federally managed species, you should, non-commercially, you should be on this Saltwater Angler Registry.
And, you know, but here's the thing that I get a kick out of. Those of us that have had the opportunity of fishing in other states and places, like, for instance, as many times as I've been to Alaska and to Oregon and to Washington, it is expected that you're going to be inspected. You know, I mean, there's no hard feelings unless you're a bad guy. I mean, you know, somebody walks, hey, how you doing? You think, who are you talking to me? What do you mean?
Right.
You want to be my friend? What are you catching? And then out comes a badge. Let me just take a look. Can I look at your license, please? No problem, right? If you're doing the right thing. I think that, and there's no pushback. I think that here, I've experienced a lot of that. And I've even felt some of it personally. So you know, because of all of the local fishermen you guys deal with, local people, they don't want to have this because they think, hey, for thousands of years, we've been fishing without this piece of paper. Why do we need this piece of paper?
Well, I think there's been a real shift maybe mm-hmm. in the past 10 years or so. I know when I first started working for the council, it really was no to fishing licenses. Mm-hmm.
Absolute no.
Absolute no. But over the past 10 years or so, it actually really has been changing where mm-hmm. people are realizing that not only do we need to know the commercial catch, but we need to know the recreational catch as well.
Yep.
And I think a lot of it has been, you know, rediscovering the traditional management and knowing that while it is your right to fish, mm-hmm. you also have a responsibility to the fisheries and to the resources.
Interesting you say that, because one time we were talking with Charlie Ka'ai'ai, who handles the indigenous side of things, and he was saying that, you know, the rules and regulations of the old days, you didn't have a license, but everybody knew. If you were this or you were that, they knew if you stepped 1 foot out of line that there was consequences.
Right. Yeah. And that, you know, we see that today those that do support the license mm-hmm. are conditional upon providing that funding from the license or those fees towards enforcement, education, and outreach, and other resources that will help the division manage. Okay,
I have one bit of experience on that which would tend to make me then agree with everything you just said. And that was, I remember distinctly when the fee came out for the ramp use, the triangular decal to go on your trailer, and they said that the money was going to be specifically earmarked for, you know, repair and maintenance of the boat ramps. In other words, it wasn't going to go into this big bucket called the general fund. From what I understand, that one of the things that may make more of us accept licensing and registration is that if the funding that was required to do that was going to be used to aid that part of the fishery. And I've been given every indication, if it does, that's what would happen.
So what happened probably 6, 7, 8 months ago, we started, the council started talking with Conservation International mm-hmm. about a project that they wanted to do and looking at the feasibility of fishing licenses in Hawaii.
Okay.
And so what this resulted in was a creation of a study group of fishermen, agency folks, Native Hawaiian practitioner interests, lawyers, economists, mm-hmm. all different groups of people coming together to conduct a feasibility study. So what we did is we looked at all the issues surrounding non-commercial fishing licenses. Mm-hmm. We talked to different people from different agencies in different parts of the United States on how they went about setting up their license systems. We looked at options for a registry, meaning just a list of names mm-hmm. of who goes fishing recreationally or non-commercially. We looked at different types of licensing systems on mm-hmm. Based on fees or a permitting system that looks at providing a permit for you to go catch certain species
that experience. I was going to ask that question. Those of us that have had the ability or the opportunity to go to Alaska or Oregon or California or Washington and Arizona and other states, your recreational license is, say, $20 a year. But if you want the trout tag or the salmon tag or the whatever tag, you pay extra for that.
Right. And, you know, those are some options that the state here might want to take into account, or at least look at it and see, will that help us? Will that either the extra funding be provided for something like enforcement, or is it just something that we just don't have the ability to do at this point?
If you break it down to the lowest common denominator and you take a guy that's on the beach at Waimanalo and he sees somebody else raking in a certain kind of fish and he has resentment, this is the kind of thing which would level that playing field a little if there were either limits or licensing or whatever required. Do you agree that many of the fishermen might be changing their mind because they're sick of seeing other people break the rule and not have any consequences?
I that's really a point of the commercial fishermen saying that, you know, mm-hmm. we're doing our part trying to keep the stock sustainable. Yeah, good point. Yeah. But meanwhile, you know, you can go and catch as much as you want. And is that fair? Mm-hmm. No, but
are you making specific reference here to bottom fish or inshore reef or everything?
It's a basic comment in general. I mean, mm-hmm. I know the bottom fish fishermen feel that way.
Yeah.
But you know, then comes the counter side where it's saying, well, we're catching for food for our family. You guys are just making all this money for it. Mm-hmm. And it's, well, you know, there's a little more than to the dynamics of the fishery than that. But, but going back to your question about the funding and where it's going to, through the study, we looked at where the fees collected would go to. And in fact, the state has a sports fish restoration funding from the federal government, from the Fish and Wildlife mm-hmm. Service. So there's an actual fund where that money goes.
I was told, and this was in Arizona, that a similar thing existed, and it got increased dramatically when the Fed realized that the state was buying into it and willing to put up part of it. In other words, what became nice extra money became something that was being able to put back in the fishery that had real value. And in many cases, it either increased the limit of fish you could catch, or it decreased the size, depending on the reports that they got. They got way more valuable reports from people that had an interest in it because they were registered.
Well, and there is precedent from other states where they would get increased funding because of licenses. But what the study found is that that's probably not the case here. We just don't have that volume of fishermen.
Yeah, of course.
Unless there really is.
When we talk about the numbers, we don't know that really.
Right. Maybe we have 1.5 million people, everyone in our population. Yeah. But from what we've estimated, it doesn't seem mm-hmm. to be able to increase that number. But the good thing with that fund is federally protected, because if you take that money and use it for fixing the roads or you know, helping the rail, the feds will take back their money. So the state shouldn't be touching that fund.
Yeah, that's why I am comfortable with being told that and having it be reality. Now, I don't know if I agree with the concept yet, but I do agree with the expenditure. And isn't it also true that at this point in time, it wouldn't be very expensive because people would push back too hard? If it came in, recreational fisherman, $250 a year, holy smokes, you'd never hear the end of it. But some states, it really is really only the cost of handling the paper.
Right. And that's, that again, part of that study is mm-hmm. looking at what the cost points are for a license or a permit or something. And they've the Conservation International folks put a lot of work into developing a model on, you know, if you plug in how much it would cost for a license, how much would that revenue would that produce? Mm-hmm. How much does it cost to run the program? And how many licenses would be needed to at least break even or make a little bit more money that can be used for other purposes?
I can tell you one thing that I do know is technology has made it possible to accomplish a lot more with a lot less. In other words, before it used to be somebody with a big ledger book on the street or at a fishing supply store writing your name down, and they put it into some base and somebody'd have to data input it and it would take forever and all kinds of hands touching it. This is going to be eventually a swipe of your driver's license is going to produce a fishing license.
Basically, and I think, you know, with online capabilities mm-hmm. now, you can take your costs down yeah. so low that even if you look at the study that to just break even, it's only a couple of dollars between yeah. $2 and $8 yeah. for a yearly license yeah. to go fishing.
Now, but I do know that, and when we talk about this kind of thing when it comes up at Fishers Forums or other places, there's still a big misunderstanding about Big Brother. And so I don't know if that is a stopping point. You said, Josh and I were talking just before we started to record the program, and we were talking about previous attempts at doing this through the legislature. And in the last session, it missed the opportunity of even being considered. But it is likely to come up in 2017. And if it does, we can use this program and others to launch, you know, some really good stuff about hearings and meetings and all of that. But I think that doesn't that also comprise what part of the study is? In other words, how much should it cost? What does it cover? Who needs it? And one would think almost everybody that fishes is going to need it, even juniors.
Well, and I think that was the goal of the study, was mm-hmm. to have that background information available, mm-hmm. Not necessarily to pick what would be best, because, you know, this issue comes up in the legislature every 3 or 4 years or so.
What do you think is some of the reasons why it gets championed? Who are some, I mean, obviously, and I'll ask you, and I have opinion, I think it's a good idea. I mean, as much as I hate, you know, Big Brother watching me, I think it's a good idea. Who are the people that seem to want it the most?
Well, I think it's changed in recent years. I think you would probably get more of the environmental conservation types that really were pushing it before.
Yep.
Now you're seeing more fishermen championing that type of cause. Not all of them, you know, because a lot of who it'll affect will be, you know, the guys going down to the shore with their family on the weekends and throwing a pole. You know, the guys who are really invested in the fishery, who spend the money on boats and reels and all this stuff, are probably the ones that are more likely to support equality on licensing for everyone.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I can tell you, based on other locales, that there is some concern here locally that with a huge number of people coming to the islands, particularly from the rest of the Pacific, the Kofa migrants that have come here, they got to eat, and they have the expertise. And there's a lot of people saying, wait a minute, we have a lot more people taking the fish now. I don't know if there's evidence to support that or not, but one would think there is.
And not just our immigrant population, but we also have visitors that come that come to Hawaii all the time. Yeah. And it's not hard to just go buy a pole or a spear down at Walmart or Kmart or wherever it belongs, you know, just go sit on the beach. And there's been, I've seen an increase in, you know, tourists that don't go just to Waikiki and stay in hotels. Mm-hmm. They're going out camping in on these beaches, and they're eating fish. I know I've had friends from the mainland who've come and done that. Yeah, so you know, it's not just the people living here. It's it's everybody that's has an effect, and it's compounding the pressures that we already have here, and adding on those immigration, all those things. They all add up. So at some point, you really have to take stock of what you have.
Here's one of the things that I've heard, and I think this is pretty valid and germane to the conversation. When you drive a vehicle, there is no such thing as ignorance of the law. You can't go to court and say, gee, I didn't see any signs. I didn't know it was the speed limit was 50. I didn't see a stop sign, I didn't know that two painted lines mean I can't cross them. You don't have that. Same thing could be said for fishing, that, you know, their ignorance is no excuse if you need to have a recreational permit to fish, because that would mean that you got a set of rules and regulations, and at least you were informed as to what the rules are.
And that, I think that's one thing that others brought up too, is that just like driving a car, right? Like you said, you need to go study for the permit, and you know, you're by getting a license, you're basically saying that I'll agree to all these rules. Mm-hmm. So there's other things that people bring up all the time, is that enforcement part is, DOCARE can't look in your cooler, but if you had a license, maybe that would give an opportunity for them to look in the cooler. But you waive other rights by getting licenses, and good or bad, you know, that could be used in the future as well.
Yeah, when you say that, anecdotally, it reminded me of something I saw happen at a boat ramp. A guy had a turtle, a baby turtle that he caught, and it was in his fish box. and the DOCARE guy or somebody was there and wanted to inspect the box, and he said, do you have probable cause? He said, yeah, I was watching with my binoculars from Barber's Point, and I saw you put this animal in there. I want to see if it's still there. Right. And the guy was busted, you know. But that does give you an idea of, there are some people that are very offended when anybody with a badge or something walks up to them and starts talking to them, because they say, why are you talking to me? I'm just here fishing. You know, maybe we have to certainly give up some of those rights to have any rights.
Well, I know you and I talked about the, you know, catching fish from in the old days. Mm-hmm. I remember times when going fishing with my grandfather, or on the boat diving, and you know, you come back with a load of fish. Mm-hmm. You go to the tackle shops now, and you see all those old pictures on the wall with the driveways full of fish. Mm-hmm. I still see that on Facebook, but the ethic has started to change where it's like, maybe you shouldn't be catching a driveway full of uhu. You know, you just catch different fish, you know, save some for later, you know, because the oceans are our refrigerator and all that kind of stuff.
In sheer numbers, you're right. I mean, I think back in the days, you caught plenty because you were good. You know, the guy, Josh got squid eye, man. He going into 40 squid. But what does he do with them? He freezes them.
Right.
Or whatever. Well, what about if you say, I'm such a good squid eye, I can go get my 2-3 squid every time I need it.
Right.
So, okay, that's what we're going to do.
Well, there's lots of those guys, too. And for me, personally, it comes down to personal responsibility, you know? I mean, you don't need to have your freezer full of fish because the fish just doesn't taste good. But I know we've gotten busier. We just can't go all the time anymore.
There's a whole nother philosophy, and that is there are some people that are gifted at some things. Like, let's say I really like calamari or I like squid, but I can't find them in the ocean, and you can. Say, Josh, next time you go diving, bring me a squid, you know, and I'll go make some of this for you. I think that that's part of our thread, part of our culture, that, okay, I'm not going to ever go poke fish anymore because I'm not good at it. Josh is good. He brings home a bucket. I take some of the fish. I give him some of my bananas because I grow really good bananas. I think people feel threatened that that lifestyle will be taken away from them if all of a sudden everything is regulated.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, I'm not the best either. But there's also other guys. You know, you see pictures on Facebook where guys have stringers full of fish and everyone's going, why'd you take so much fish? But you don't know. Maybe this guy's going home to his tutu and taking two fish to her and then going to his neighbors, all these people who can't fish anymore. Yeah. So there's that interpretation that we know.
I got to tell you, a long time ago, there's this a local doctor who was a state senator at one time. I'm not going to say his name, but he had a lot of friends, and I was among them, and we had a bunch of divers that we'd go out to his place at Punaloo and take his dinghy and go outside the reef, and everybody would poke fish. And what he would do, and plenty. I'm talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fish. And the object was put them all in buckets full of ice and went door to door, giving them to the neighbors from Uncle So-and-so who's running for the Senate.
Right.
And there was nothing wrong or unethical about that. Today, it would be campaign violations. It would be all kinds of stuff. So I think that people feel that, look, we've gotten along with this so far without it. Why do we need to put another noose around our neck? What's the reason why all of a sudden, you've outlined some of them, but what do you think is going to be the reason to get support in the legislature again to say, okay, never mind all of the objections before, this is why we must go forward with this?
I think there's been more of an environmental consciousness. I mean, you see it.
Number one.
Right. Yeah. You've seen it, you know, they started it in the 70s with Nixon and the EPA and Silent Spring and all that stuff. But then you've seen in the past 10 years with the institution of more marine protected areas, more these marine national monuments coming up and more people wanting to conserve more of a regeneration of traditional knowledge, all of that kind of stuff that's been going on. And it's something that we need to be aware of because we really can't continue living on Earth operating the same way we did with increasing numbers of people. I mean, I'm not going to go into the climate science kind of stuff, but just, you know, we're on an island, we have limited resources, and it becomes more and more limited every day.
Yeah, I'm going to agree, and I think that would be the main reason. And I don't care what anybody thinks like you about, is global warming real? Is it just cyclical? Are we in one of these cycles? You look out the window every day, the weather's different, and there's no way to explain it. But I can agree with the explaining it about the responsibility that we feel. And that I don't look at this as being overregulated. And when you talk about, people are very zealous, right? I think when President Obama extended the monument just with the signature, just to, for this legacy thing, people can say, maybe this got overstepped and maybe that some of the rules and regulations we have aren't there yet that need to be. And some of the things that we think we're protecting don't need to be quite as protected because if we had these other things in place, overfishing would be limited or regulated anyway.
Right. And that's always been the contention of things like that. It's like, well, you know, we want to be involved in the process and we want you to hear us, not just go and say, you know, for the good of mankind kind of thing, missionary type of approach. We really want to be able to have that say and to go through the the process so that we can understand everything behind it before making a decision.
Okay, now, in that we don't know specifically of any legislator that's going to do something in this session, which begins in a few weeks, that doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. Is there going to be any more formal discussions that you know of? Because right now you're looking at a study got commissioned, right?
Right. So the study is available on the DLNR website, and it's also available on our website, wpcouncil.org. But that study was basically commissioned to be a study, just like any other research paper out there. And what people do with it, it's beyond the study group.
Yeah.
But it's available if anyone really wants to champion it, or they want to find some reason to speak against it.
Yeah, I was going to say it should give you the information you need to quantify a position. And then if you see something come up, you'll know. I think that this is going to be the year where, through the council segment here on the program and others, that there's going to be a little bit more response. We saw how things can happen that you don't want or don't expect in this last go around. So now we have to get a little bit more vehement in our support or our opposition to things.
Right, and I think it's, the part of coming on the show is, making people more aware of what's going on and how it affects them. And, this is just one other thing that if you want to be involved in the process, you have to start coming to these meetings early on.
Hey, I can tell you one thing, and this is going to be what's happening next time. The last Fishers Forum, social media right away, people were texting right from there saying, you won't believe what I just learned. And I saw these three Hawaiians arguing with each other over the same point. And it was good because I was there. And I think that's a good stroke for the council, but also that the council doesn't have an agenda or an interest in the subject. Just bringing the subject up and airing it out is what you do.
Right. While we'd like to see more data and to know what's going on, that way we can manage properly, it's really up to what the community really wants.
Well, guys like me say, hey, we've studied everything already and done with the studies. But yet, in fact, this current study it's like brand new. In other words, it's something that we have to open our eyes about. And if it does nothing but quantify how many of us there are, it's important.
Right. And it's answers those questions that always come up every legislative session or in everyday conversation about when you're talking about licensing. So I encourage people to read it because then you won't have those questions anymore. And if someone does ask you, you can say, well, this study said this and that.
What is the where is it available? You said it's in two places, right?
Yeah. Right now it's available on the DLNR website.
Okay.
And it's also available on our website at
wpcouncil.org. Yeah. Okay. Now, let's see if you and I can roll the dice. Next week, Kitty Simons, executive director, is going to be here. We're going to talk about the year, and I'll put you on the spot right now and say that in that you've obviously decided that this is kind of what your career direction is right now. This is what you do. Was it a pretty good year? And do you look forward to 2017?
I think there's been, there's been a lot of highs and a lot of really lows, especially with the monument expansion, as far as from the council perspective. From my personal work point, I think I've experienced a lot of good things, especially this non-commercial study is something that I wanted to see get done for a while and answer some of the questions I've had. But for 2017, I think with this new administration coming out with the president-elect, there's going to be a lot of changes.
We certainly are going to have an opportunity to put it out there. Whether or not people are going to pick it up and fly with it, we don't know. But in all indications, there's going to be a lot of things that get changed because when you have a change, you have a change. And for the first time in a long time, the administrative branch in the House and the Senate are going to be controlled by one party. And in that we have a party representation from Hawaii that's in the other party, anything that has to do with Hawaii and the Pacific, we better find some friends to go talk to these guys about.
Right. And, there's a lot of talk and people being scared of what might come. Mm-hmm. And nothing's happened yet. But professionally, for me, it's rather exciting because, we have a change in administration after 8 years.
Yep.
And we're excited when President Obama took over because it was a change from the previous 8 years. So, you know, in this next year, you are going to have a new Secretary of Commerce. You'll probably have a new Administrator of NOAA, new National Marine Fisheries Service executives. So all this change, you know, so provides some hope for what can go on. I mean, it can go either way, but at least, you know, there's a bit of optimism there.
Well, I can tell you one thing. It's been a great ride. I look forward to a change in direction and in administration. I think this is a good thing. Okay, so that's Josh DeMello, and you learned a little bit. We're going to talk about this subject some more, for sure. But I do want to remind you that next week, the executive director, Kitty Simons, is going to be on with us. And we're going to talk about the year in review. And more important, what the ED decides is the direction for, the first 3 to 6 months of the council going into 2017 and how you can be a part of it. Once again, we're going to absolutely 100% prove to you that the council is a bottoms-up organization, and you and me are on the bottom, and those that are on the top want our input. So you go to WPCouncil.org on a regular basis, and you'll learn about what we're talking about. Our big thanks to the Department of Land and Natural Resources. Be careful around Kaneohe Bay and in Kailua for the next week with the president in town. We got more stuff coming up. If you want to hear something on the show, it's easy. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. Have a great week. We'll see you just the day before Christmas, all right? We'll see you next time. Aloha.